everybody. This is Mark Chaffardini with Go See Talk. Thank you so much for coming back to the Go See Talk podcast, or as we're throwing around in the office, two O's in Goose. I have my my caballero, my consigliere, my compadre, Federico Furzan, all the way from Buenos Aires, joining us. Hey, Federico, how are you today?
Hey, what's up, Mark, my good buddy from Texas. Thanks for the warm welcome. I liked the two O's in Goose. I really like that. And you have to add me as your wingman. I'm your compadre, but I'm your wingman as well.
You are still dangerous. You can be my wingman anytime.
Bullshit. You can be mine.
And hello, listeners from around the globe. Things are looking up from this side of the world. It's a very weird and warm summer in Argentina. And what else I got to say, I got my booster shot this week. And it absolutely destroyed me, but I'm okay. I just want to see movies, man. That's what I want. That's what 2022 is all about. How about you, man? How's your family?
Very well, very well. I think, yeah, it's nice that we've crossed this threshold. 2021 was kind of a kick in the teeth, but prospero año y felicidad for 2022. We're excited. Yeah, my family's well. Contrary to the heat in Buenos Aires, we have had some cold weather in Texas and a first snow of the year, which has been fun, but we're enjoying it. We're doing very well. Thanks for asking.
Great, man. Just great.
Well, you know, as you mentioned, Federico, just want to watch movies. It's amazing the ability to see pretty much anything you want, anytime you want, anywhere you want. Bathrooms, boardrooms, bus stations, outhouses, tree houses. You name it, you can get from Dune, from Dusk Till Dawn to Desperado. You can get anything, and it's pretty remarkable. But with all that content, with that great power comes great responsibility. And as journalists, film fans, and consumers of content, we are going to use our great power to cherry pick the best and worst of 2021. So Federico and I have been putting our heads together virtually and coming up with some excellent choices to show the tastes that we have, or lack of taste. So we got a fun show for you guys. And why don't you tee up our first topic of today? What are we going to be discussing?
Okay, we're going to be picking our best and worst of 2021. We're not going to go very long on that, we promise. Each of us is going to give you one of our picks for what we best and worst enjoyed last year. I'm going to start. And my first film that I'm going to start as my favorite film 2021 is going to be Michel Franco's New Order. This is a very interesting Mexican film. And it's actually a very short glimpse into anarchy and the consequences of what we could depict as the fall of man. I mean, it's a film that starts during this very big posh party in Mexico City. And in 5 or 10 minutes, it turns into hell. I'm not going to say what happens, but needless to say, it was one of my most important film experiences of 2021. It was very controversial. I mean, the director got a lot of heat from audiences all around the world. And I just think it was a very important film. Definitely recommend that to you.
Well, excellent, excellent. You know, when you say things go to hell, things go crazy, is it something like a wild concept to where kids are at a prom and a zombie outbreak happens, and ipso facto, they call it Dance of the Dead, something crazy like that?
No, it's actually more grounded stuff that happens.
Okay.
But I mean, regardless of that, people behave like zombies. And that's all I'm going to say.
Okay, fair enough. Everybody, check that out. You know, I have a very odd choice for probably best film of last year. I don't know, favorite, best, they share some commonalities. But I think in terms of overall competency, overall professionalism, just a dense narrative, I'm going to throw a huge hat tip to Denis Villeneuve's Dune. There's something about that adaptation of the classic and seminal Frank Herbert novel of the same name that just, it's excellent, always around. It's subdued, it's purposefully plotted, it's expertly designed from production value to visual effects. Casting is top-notch, and even though a lot of people seem to take umbrage with Timothée Chalamet in the role being kind of the weak link, I think that was purposeful. There's so much strength around his character, and he's kind of thrust almost fish out of water, or lizard in the desert, I guess you would say, into a world he can't quite understand, and he's trying to do his best. But I think that just, I found myself rewinding. Yes, I didn't see it in theaters. I found myself rewinding so many scenes just to sort of watch the exchanges between Oscar Isaac and Jason Momoa and Josh Brolin. It's such a well-done feature. So I'm kind of excited for part two.
Yeah, that was definitely one of my favorites from the last year as well. I actually saw it in an IMAX theater. And man, the sound design of that film, yeah. The sound design of that film, wow, it blew everyone's minds. I think it was the first wide shot when we see like the desert and all, just like this soundtrack that just filmed with like out of tune drums, I like to call it that. Man, just people, like I actually stared at the ones that were beside me and they were all like jaw dropped from the sound. So congratulations on that. Yeah, that's a very good choice.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Villeneuve fan. I know you are, but there's just something I wasn't expecting to like it. I thought it might've just been too out there for me, but I've been wrong before.
Yeah. Now I'll say that you haven't been wrong before. I mean, everyone's entitled to their own opinions. Yeah. Well, I'm going to go with my second of the best of 2021. It's actually an animated film. It was streamed on Netflix and it's called The Mitchells Versus the Machines.
Oh, I heard about this one. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to see that film. You really, really have to see it. This is a beautifully animated film that actually made me look inside my own family and laugh at every issue that I thought my family had. I'm going to like make a small summary out of it. It's about a family that decide to take a road trip, and there's this like rebellion that just happens during that trip. I'm not going to mention anything else, but needless to say, it has something to do with technology. And what I like so much about the film is that the main character, which is like this teenage girl, it's actually a reflection of film lovers. I actually love that in the film. And it's very well done. It's done with passion. I love the end credits. We don't have an after credit scene. We have this beautifully end credits that are put together with images of the film crew. And I just love that. It's an endearing film. It's a lovely film. And again, it's actually one of those films that make you look at other houses of animation that's not Disney. I love that. So you have to see that as well.
Man, there's an interesting parallel happening. I've been excited to check it out. I've actually watched the trailer a couple times just to making sure that I'm understanding it right. And I want to go in, even though I kind of have an embargo for things I really want to see. I don't like to watch a trailer. I just want to make sure that, I mean, I should just take it on blind faith. You put it on your list, I'm going to go. It's tonight. Tonight's viewing opportunity.
Great.
In a similar respect, I think my second favorite of the year is Encanto, a similar movie about families. You just mentioned about studios aside from Disney, but I just caught up with it. My daughter has been kind of watching it in her after school program, and was singing some of the songs. And there's just something that's so well similar to Dune. It's so well paced, but it's vibrant, and just the way it embraces family, and probably similar to Mitchell's and the Machines, how, you know, there's no perfect person. We all live with who we are. It's okay to be yourself. And that's a great message, but there's just something about how this was done, kind of took it to the next level, and seeing it from a different culture's point of view. You know, they had Raya and the Last Dragon earlier last year, Encanto, Luca was the Pixar. So all great films, but I think of for an animated film, animated or not, I really liked Encanto.
Yeah, I have to see that one. I haven't seen it yet. I know it's on Disney Plus, but I really have to see that. I mean, my girlfriend and her sister were actually seeing that today, and we just singled on to the soundtrack. I just have to see it. I mean, I know it's a depiction of something that has to do with South America values. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen the trailer, and I don't like to see trailers, but I've seen some images of that, and I think it's pretty obvious that it has to do with some Latino characters. And that just like feels very important to be happening in movies right now.
Certainly. I think one of the things that, you know, I don't want to say that the world is the same as it was 20, 30 years ago, but there's something to that people need to understand that, you know, there's things happening simultaneously around us all the time. There's good things and bad things happening. People are having great experiences, terrible experiences, similar experiences. But here's the thing, due to how entertainment was curated and delved out or put on exposition, you know, you didn't get to see pockets of, you know, what other cultures were doing. You didn't get to see different takes on walks of life. So I think what's great about technology these days is that you're able to see how similar we are, even though we don't know anything about each other or we don't grow up anywhere close to each other. But a lot of things happening that show us just how relatable we are. And I think that's great. So more inclusivity, I would say.
Yeah, I have to see that one. Well, what do you say we go from the best? I mean, I still have to mention what's my favorite film from 2021. I don't know if you want to do that first, or maybe first go to the bad ones we saw.
Well, before we do that, do you maybe have an also-ran, something that was maybe an honorable mention? I mean, I always love to cheat the system and say, well, that was good, but maybe consider this as a little tailor.
Well, yeah. I mean, I know we're talking films and I love films, but I think that TV shows have to have this honorable mention here. I mean, it's not, the amount of TV shows that we get each year just keeps increasing, and the same happens with quality. I have to say that my favorite TV show from last year was the Succession. Man, that's a great TV show. Just the dynamics of a family that's just like filled with greed and the weirdest kind of love that you may see. It's fantastically scripted. It's very well acted. The music's great. And with Succession, you get a feeling that things won't end well. But I mean, you kind of develop hope in those characters because you want to see them obtain something good from what's happening. And even though you know it's not going to end well, you keep rooting for them. But the thing that happens is like the worst one that you never imagined. It just like leaves you drained out of every sense of love and hope that you have for those families. The last 5 or 10 minutes of the last episode were like emotionally draining. That's my recommendation for TV shows. And that's my honorable mention for 2021.
That's great. Is this the most recent season or are you talking about the whole series?
Yeah, no, the most recent season.
Okay. Well then great. I think I will reciprocate. I watched Snowpiercer on HBO Max. It's the TNT series that I'm almost positive is a prequel. Has to be a prequel. I don't know how it correlates to the actual Bong Joon-ho film. Second season came out this year, and I watched both of them at the end of last year. I'm sorry, how's it? Second season came out in 2021. I watched both seasons last year, and there's something very gripping about it. You know, long form narratives are always, they can be rewarding because you get to spend more time with these characters, but just seeing the levels of chess games and mind games, and not only that, just the horrific conditions of life on the Snowpiercer make it pretty, pretty captivating. And also for a TNT show, just imagining that seeing this on syndicated cable, it's pretty, pretty rough and gruesome, but I like the interplay between the characters and how alliances and foes are created. So I'll throw my hat in the ring for Snowpiercer. Let's go get our train.
Well, that's a very interesting choice. I haven't watched it. I love the film. I remember when it came out, I saw like 2 or 3 times in a row, and I don't usually do that, but I didn't want to miss the whole production design and all the details that I knew were very important in the film. And that's why I saw it so many times. And when I knew that a TV show was going to come out, I was instantly like denied to watch it. I mean, I just didn't want to watch it. I usually see TV shows that are based on previous films. But I mean, last year I saw a TV show, we actually surprised me, and it's based on a movie and it's called Chucky. I mean, the Chucky TV show, I had no hope watching it. My attitude towards watching it was the same one that I got when I watched the last Chucky film, not the remake. I love the remake, but the last, like, I think it was Curse of Chucky. I'm not really sure. Curse of Cult of Chucky. I'm not sure.
That's the one that takes place in an insane asylum, I think. Right.
Yes.
Danny is, or somebody's in an insane asylum. Yeah,
exactly. Yes. I didn't like it. I had the same attitude when I was watching the TV show. But the pilot on the TV show is just great. I mean, Chucky is back to his roots. The TV show is written by Don Mancini, which is he's like the creator of Chucky. And it just takes the best elements of the movies and puts them on a greatly scripted and performed TV show. So that surprised me. I think due to your recommendation and seeing that you actually loved it so much, I'm going to watch Snowpiercer. So thanks for that. It's with Jennifer Connelly, right?
It is, yes. Okay. And it's a very strange casting choice. She's probably the only recognizable cast member until you get to the second season. But she's pretty, she brings some very dramatic chops. I mean, we're all aware of how she made us feel for her in Requiem for a Dream. And I've always had a crush on her since The Rocketeer, but she's going through a lot of turmoil in the show, but her character hides it. And that's not spoiling anything, but there's some very great exchanges with her and the things she has to do to keep the train moving, literally and socioeconomically. So Yeah, hope you enjoy it. We'll chat.
Okay, I'm convinced. I'm gonna watch that.
All right. So worst. Ooh, what's been dragging us down? What's got us in a white hot rage from last year?
Okay, we're going to start. I don't like making worst of lists. I mean,
okay. Well, then how would you phrase it? How do we turn it around?
I mean, there were questionable movies. Of course, I stayed away from small studio films because they cannot be compared to big studio films. I mean, I would not call them the worst. It's the ones that most disappointed me from every point of view. And I'm going to start with, I mean, I have to say this. There weren't a lot of worst films in 2021. I mean, I had like four or five that I wanted to put in the list. I just came down to these two because, you know, just because of the way they made me feel after watching them. I feel disappointed. I felt like it was my time, and that's why they're here. So the first one is it's called The Little Things. It's a film that has a very star-studded cast, and it just felt like a horrible waste of like resources that I think that fortunately everyone just has forgotten about them. It stars Denzel Washington. I think it's the first Denzel Washington film that I hated. I love all of his films. I think that his presence in a film just makes it a little better. And it stars like Jared Leto in a very like awkward role that I just didn't understand. And I feel it was like a photocopy of Seven, like smushed photocopy. I hated the film. I'm sorry, just hated it.
So you said like basically wasted talent and didn't go anywhere or give you anything new to think about?
Okay. Absolutely, yeah. It was horrible.
Well, geez. I think I share a similar mentality. You know, I have this initials or this acronym, DWMFT. Don't waste my fucking time. And sorry to throw some harsh language out there, but it's like, you know, we've only got so much time around the sun and around the earth. And if it doesn't move the mercury for us, it's sort of not worth the time spent. But I think the biggest disappointment of 2021 for me was The Matrix Resurrections. Oh, how I just questioned every single narrative, casting, action, special effect choice in that movie. It is, my friend says, you're really experiencing some white hot rage, aren't you? And I said, it's just because, like I said in my review, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. I just feel like there was wrong turns made every step of the way. So still some stuff to like, but overall, this was not what it should have been. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. We'll leave it at that. But I think, I don't think it's one of the worst movies, but that's the feeling we got. I mean, it was just disappointing for us. It didn't ruin the franchise like most people say. I mean, I don't like to think that recent movies can ruin something that was made like 20 or 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the way that someone takes a concept and like twists it, I mean, to their own intention that we don't actually understand, it was just unexplainable. Mm. I mean, I think it was just an ugly film. And I have to agree with you. It was just disappointing.
And I totally get the fact that there was, you know, there's a lot of meta narrative, meta humor in the film to try to show, you know, it's like looking, you know, breaking the fourth wall to say specifically, the studio is going to do this with or without you. So this is your chance to do what you want to, if you want to salvage anything and make this your own, Take Your Chance. And it's basically, it was a combination of, giving the middle finger to the studios, but also just doing really whatever you want. And I watched this review from Red Letter Media, and they compare it to Gremlins 2, where Joe Dante just had the absolute best time. And I thought the parallels that he made between that and the Mefortrix, as I like to call it, is just too outstanding to not call attention to or acknowledge. So, again, there are some good parts, but I think that in efforts of expanding this universe, I think that maybe they should have changed their direction or focus. But anyway, absolutely. The music was good. I had a great time with the music, but that's another point.
Okay, so moving on to one of the worst in 2021. Well, I have to say that I expected this film to be better. I love the main actress, and I think it had potential. But Netflix's The Woman in the Window is just a mess of a film. Hmm. It looks like a good script that's adapted into an ugly film, and it's just like we're not used to Netflix making like masterpieces. I mean, they make good movies, but this one's just the opposite. I mean, just the moral code of that film, it's fucked up. I mean, the main characters is just submitted into an array of bad behavior, and just like she doesn't deserve this. And I feel that movie mistreats her just for the sake of the story going towards something like a climax that just doesn't make any sense. I don't remember much of the film, fortunately, but it was just like a mystery thriller that I just don't want to know anything about. I know that there was like this spin-off that came out recently in Netflix that has to do with the movie, and I said I'm not going to watch it. I mean, it's, I don't have any interest in it, even though there's a possibility that it makes fun of the movie. I just don't want to see that. Mm-hmm. It's a horrible film.
So is the title longer? It's like The Woman in the Window and The House Across the Street. It's kind of a parody.
Yes.
Okay.
Apparently so. I really don't know anything about it.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay. Well, that's funny. I you know, in a way, I have a similar opinion of what you thought The Little Things in Netflix's Don't Look Up, which I think it had some merit, but it's not the worst, but I feel like it was a waste of resources. And similarly was Red Notice, the Rock and Gal Gadot and Ryan Reynolds movie.
Yeah.
Where it just seemed like so foolish, but no, I think the other movie that really kind of didn't do anything for me last year was Willy's Wonderland. Because Nick Cage had a pretty good year last year with Pig, but I think contrarily, the film he was in, Willy's Wonderland, which was a take on Five Nights at Freddy's, was just bad. And you know going in that it's not going to be Shakespeare, but there's just something about it's nonsensical and asinine, and feels like I'm squashing something that had no fighting chance to begin with. But that's another one where the premise could have been fun or cute and engaging, and it just was poorly executed. So
that's a very interesting take, because I don't think Willy's Wonderland had any chance to be good. I mean, just look at the title. Just look at Nick Cage, like, yeah, he's guzzling like soda and not beer for some reason that we actually don't know about. Just the premise of that film it's too awkward to make something serious out of it.
Yeah.
But I think that it was just like just a fun time with Nick Cage. I mean, I think that I saw that like back to back with Pig,
mm-hmm.
just because, I mean, you cannot go on a Nick Cage marathon and just not watch the best and the worst of his films. And Pig was such a great movie. And after that, I watched Willy's Wonderland and I was just like, what? I did not hate the film. I just had fun and I felt like I needed to drink soda after that for some reason. Yeah.
Well, Pig was great. You know, I think what made that movie was the unexpected turns of finding out who he was, but also Alex Wolff just being sort of the audience surrogate watching this happen, and scenes where he just like, you know, there's this one scene at a restaurant where Nick Cage yeah. talks to a chef.
That's
and they
great.
Have a heart to heart. And all Alex Wolff does is look shocked and not blink. And it's one of the most captivating scenes in the movie because he's you and we're him and experiencing just this tour de force that Cage is putting upon us. So anyway,
it's actually sad that he's not like being thrown around in the awards circuit just for getting a nomination for this one. His performance is mind-blowing. Not because he's Nick Cage and we're usually we're used to seeing him in some like straight to video shit and things like that, but his performance was just great. I mean, his motivation, and we still don't know what his motivation was. I mean, it we know it, but it's not strong enough to make him the person that he is. It's raw, it's organic, and you feel like you're in the presence of a very great actor.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great film.
Yeah, couldn't have said it better myself. Way to go.
Thanks. So what do you say we go to our next topic? I'm going to let you pick because we don't have much more to talk about, but I'm going to let you pick this one.
All right. Why don't we just say what the... What is our favorite? What is the thing that, despite the critics, despite our loved ones, despite our common sense tells us this is something that speaks to us on a DNA level and just it gets you, wakes you up in the middle of the night thinking about how effing awesome it was. What is your absolute favorite pick of 2021?
Well, that's a very hard choice. It was very hard to pick between this horror movie that's called Censor. I love that film. Then another one that's called Seder, which is this like very intimate horror film that we have to talk about. But then I have to go with my obvious choice for 2021. I mean, Steven Spielberg's West Side Story is a masterpiece from the very beginning. It's a very beautiful film. Every shot makes me feel proud of a generation that can enjoy the film on a big screen because you have to see the film on a big screen. I mean, the music, the performances, the choreographies, everything in that film works. And it's my favorite film of 2021 because I don't like musicals and it changed my mind. That's it. That's the reason why. It made me fall in love with a genre that I don't usually love.
Well, that's pretty impacting. So here's something maybe we can just pick your brain a little bit more. So Ansel Elgort plays one of the leads in the film.
Yeah.
He was previously in a musical, a quasi-musical, Edgar Wright's Baby Driver. What did you think of that?
Baby Driver?
Yes.
I liked Baby Driver just because people said that it was like a music video, like a very long music video. I don't agree with that. I think the pace of that film resembles that of a music video, but it's just like this very frantic comedy that just makes well mixed with action. And it's Edgar Wright. I mean, he imprints his own personality in every film. And I just love the joke, the Michael Myers joke with the masks. Yeah. I mean, that's just unforgettable, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you could think of a better joke to put in a comedy film that has to do with slasher films, I mean, I wouldn't have come with that. I mean, that's just great. That's what I remember most about the film.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to ruin the mystique of movie making magic, but you do remember what happened. Do you know the story behind that? Why that's in the movie?
No, I don't. Can you please?
I don't want to be the one to tell you. We'll take it offline. I'll tell you about it afterwards. It's still one of the best moments of the movie, and it does become a calling card for the whole thing.
It works. Yeah. It works, and that's enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. You're right. That's what is great about Edgar Wright, that film. But there was something that happened last year that didn't blow my socks off. I was not a big fan of Last Night in Soho because I felt like it was a departure from Edgar Wright. Now, he did a documentary about the Sparks Brothers, which is pretty fantastic, both for its execution, but also telling the world about these musicians who've been doing something for a number of decades that seemingly, well, I didn't know about, so I can't imagine how many other people didn't know about the Sparks Brothers. So anyway, when it came to Edgar Wright doing Last Night in Soho, it just felt like such a departure. It felt like he was trying to be somebody else. And I believe that that's where sort of emulating this British murder mystery after school special, you know, it wasn't working for me. It still had some calling cards and hallmarks of his repertoire and his director's touch, but similar to The Matrix, I was just a little let down.
Well, I haven't seen that one. I have to see Last Night in Soho, and I don't think I've got the chance to watch it because it hasn't been released on any platform that I have seen it. And it played in theaters like 1 week. I didn't get a chance to see it, but I love Edgar Wright. And, but I mean, his most recent movies, I didn't love them. I always find that watching or rewatching Shaun of the Dead, it works better for me. I think it's one of the best zombie films ever made. And I just like to go back to that trilogy that he did, that Dumb People trilogy that he does with Simon Pegg. I mean, I prefer to go to that. And I didn't hear good things about Last Night in Soho. I didn't watch it at that point when it was released in theory because I don't like to watch films during their hype. And is it true that it's like some giallo thing?
Because it's very, looks very like close that. To giallo. Yeah.
Okay.
But it's also, I mean, you know, what makes Wright great is his mixing of genres. So it's giallo, it's kind of time travel, it's murder mystery. And just, you know, walking those three different lines is enough to make it appealing and keep the suspense up. But
we can
talk about it after. But
all right. But I want to know, what's your favorite pick for 2021?
My favorite pick. If departures are a bad thing and sticking to your guns is a good thing, I'm going to go all in on James Gunn. I know we talked about the Suicide Squad earlier in the middle of last year on our podcast, but there's just something that I find myself going back to, both the irreverence, both the dedication, both the off-the-wall insanity and zaniness that makes the Suicide Squad a win. And that's what's great about him. On paper, it shouldn't work. On paper, none of it really sounds like it would coalesce and gel, but he finds a way to cram it in a vice, cover it in glue and honey and glitter and F-bombs and decapitations, and boom, it becomes a super mega hit. So 21 Gun salute to the career of James Gunn. Actually, that doesn't sound right. 21 gun salute means it's over. No, we are saluting James Gunn. Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, it's just great. I mean, you know that every film he's going to make, you're going to have a different time. That's what I think about him. I mean, you're just guaranteed to see something that's not been done before. That's what I appreciate about film directors like that.
Yeah, and I mean, I find myself not more than one note. And I think that that's why I'm drawn to these movies that are, you know, not one note. It's just so much going on and so sporadic, and it works. And also, you know, the what he's able to get out of the people he works with. One of the reasons that you know, Tyler Bates did a fantastic job with both the Guardians 1 and 2 scores. And there's a reason that I use a portion of the Guardians score in the podcast intro, because it's just so full-bodied and magnificent. I hope more people appreciate it and get to know it. And it's one of the reasons that I wanted to use that as the intro music to this podcast. It's a combination
That's a great choice. Yeah. Well, so, speaking of scores. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like, I mean, we here in Ghosty Talk, and or Two O's in Ghosts, as we like to call it now, just like to raise
it rolls off the tongue well, film, doesn't it?
Yeah,
sounds
it
good.
Does.
Right?
It does. It does. That's gonna be our choice from now on. I mean, we like to raise awareness about film scores, and a best of 2021 list wouldn't be complete without mentioning what our favorite film scores were of last year. So I'm going to mention mine, but I'm going to cheat. I'm sorry. It's just that I watch movies late, and my pick for 2021 it's going to be from a 2020 movie. And I mentioned this to you before, but it's called The Wolf of Snow Hollow, and the score by an artist called Lovett. It's my favorite pick for 2021 because I just couldn't stop listening to it. I mean, the composer's sharp decision to use like subtle symphonies and just like orchestral melodies feels right for a film that it definitely doesn't play by the rules, because it's like this horror comedy. It's like this werewolf film that's hidden inside a comedy film. It's very weird, but it's very effective. And he actually reminded me of Danny Elfman's very original method for introducing what was Winter River in Beetlejuice. It just made me remember that, because the first time that I saw Beetlejuice, I just felt like we were entering a very particular town. And the same happens with The Wolf of Snow Hollow. That introduction without Lovett's score wouldn't work. Definitely wouldn't work. So that's my favorite pick for 2021, even though it's a 2020 film. And if I had to mention my favorite film score for 2021, it would be Hans Zimmer's tune.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty pretty high praise. You know, if you like Ben Lovett, check out Synchronicity. It's a time travel movie that is a little bit convoluted and sort of falls under the weight of its own ambitions, but Synchronicity has just a real pulse pounding score. So when you get a chance, I remember you speaking very highly of The Wolf of Snow Creek. Is that right?
Wolf of Snow Hollow.
Snow Hollow. Yes. I have not got around to it, so I will trade you, but yeah, Lovett has been just knocking stuff out of the park lately. And it's so funny. I've gotten so many pitches from his PR people, and it just, we have not been able to line something up. But I tell you, Ben, Federico and I are coming for you this year, 2022.
Absolutely.
It's O-N.
Absolutely. Yes.
Well, great. Thank you for that. And Dune. Yes. Dune, was pretty spellbinding, kind of polarizing, maybe an acquired taste. I've heard positive and negative feedback, but, you have to imagine that to bring a world that vibrant and alien, you don't go in with just a French horn. So you need something to similarly walk that bizarre line, similar to maybe what Junkie XL did with Mad Max Fury Road. You know,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I have to agree with you on that.
Yeah, I was. One thing I caught up recently was Nightmare Alley. Nathan Johnson has done work for his cousin Rian Johnson's films, from Brick to Looper to Knives Out. And he scored Nightmare Alley in a way that almost felt Elfman, but that's not trying to be a copycat. There's just something to where that world needed something that was almost Carnivalesque, but totally subdued. And it was more playing to Nathan Johnson's sensibilities with the piano. Very, very high note, high praise for him. But the one that I'm going to go with is actually a movie that I haven't even seen. I will tell you why. It's a Japanese film called Drive My Car, and I honestly just stumbled upon the score very recently. I'm a patron of Bandcamp. It's an indie music platform, and every now and then they throw new and notable music in their feed. And there's just something about the complexity of this that knocked every single score, knocked him down without a fight of 2021. It's from a Japanese composer named Eiko Ishibashi, and it's kind of like, let's say this, it's jazzy, but so it's a combination of soul, it's a combination of Birdman, and just how it floats between some drums and sort of otherworldly sounds and traditional jazz arrangements. It's so beautiful, and recalls very much what Joe Hisaishi does for the Studio Ghibli films. And so now I'm on this mad quest to find Drive My Car and see what the what this magical score does to the narrative. So kind of a cheat, but that's my praise for 2021.
That's great. I mean, you already gave me my choice for today, which is Nightmare Alley. I haven't cut around to it, but I'm going to watch that today, definitely. And let me see if I can try to help you watch Drive My Car, because I got to spring it around somewhere.
Yes! Or as they say in Japan, Saiko, which means awesome. I watched Nightmare Alley last night for the first time, and I had, I'm not going to ruin anything, but things get really good in the third act. And there's just something about the legitimacy to a Del Toro picture. I mean, even the most innocuous detail, even if the most unimportant fiber on a garment or blinking light in the background, there's so much thought to these worlds to make them as full-bodied as possible, to make you feel like this is legitimate, not like you just had your craftspeople in the back grab whatever was off the Batman soundstage or something like that. I'm making it up, but there's so much thought that goes into it. So it's, we shall talk, my friend. We shall talk.
Yeah, most definitely.
Well, we are in the last quarter of the show. And what do you got for us, big guy? What are we going to round out this podcast?
Well, yeah, it's time to wrap up show, but we're going to do this with a very we're just gonna say what we're looking forward to watch in 2022. I mean, 2022 is the year that we go back to the theaters. I mean, Michael Myers came back home. We're going to be slashing our way through the cinemas and enjoying the hell out of that dark and cold room where dreams actually come true. So on that note, I thought that we were going to end the show with a wink to what's coming next year. I mean, everyone's expecting the Batman, the Halloween sequel, but I'm actually going to stay away from those like very important IPs and say what's right up my alley in 2022. I'm gonna pick my first three and then you go forward with that. I mean, Jordan Peele's Nope.
Oh, it's, yes.
Absolutely. Going. It's very hard not to get excited for what Peele's doing next. His previous movies, like, they were remarkable in terms of making us like trust the industry again and for making good original films. Besides, I mean, a title like Nope, with no information whatsoever about what it's going to be about. I'm excited, man. I'm absolutely excited. My next choice, of course, I have to go with my favorite director, Steven Spielberg's The Fablemans. I don't know if it's pronounced like that. But, I mean, it's an autobiographical film. It means it's semi-autobiographical because it's not that very direct on what Spielberg did. I want that. I mean, he has a sensibility for drama that always has a great effect. And he won't disappoint us with that. And my last choice is going to be James Cameron's Avatar 2. I mean, will this be the year that we get to see Avatar 2? I don't know. I mean, I'm still waiting for the 4K release of The Abyss. I mean, I haven't watched the film again because I'm just like waiting for a very good release on his director's cut, and you cannot see that anywhere else. And it's hard to believe that, I was thinking about this, that James Cameron has only done 10 movies in 40 years. It's uncanny, man.
Really?
Yes.
And he's still a force, still a name, yes. Still an icon. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely quality over quantity, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
Man.
So those are my picks for 2022. I'm going to be running through the tiers to watch those and every single other one of those. But how about yours?
Well, I'm just still shocked that Avatar 2 is up there for you. I mean, it's great. I mean, I think Avatar blew people's expectations out of the water. And it just did such big box office numbers. I mean, is it still the most profitable movie in history?
I don't know.
Okay.
I have to look up on that.
Well, that's great. I'm going to match you. I'm going to go Titan for Titan. I think my the first of my three is Killers of the Flower Moon. Martin Scorsese's film based on the book by David Gran. I'm not the biggest Scorsese fan. The Irishman was a little long in the tooth, but still well done. And Hugo wasn't for me. But I think that when you talk about cast, Leonardo DiCaprio, Jesse Plemons, Brendan Fraser, the list goes on. And just anything that supports the Brendan Fraser renaissance, I'm all on board for. But I mean, look at goes down further. It goes Robert De Niro, Barry Corbin, John Lithgow. And then, I mean, he even people that you don't know, there's a purpose to having them in the film. And I just want to throw a little praise to a friend of the site, Michael Abbott, who was in The Death of Dick Long and The Dark and the Wicked. We've had him on the show before. We've talked to him. So Michael, we're finally excited to see your film, buddy. We're looking forward to it. Second film for me is Havoc, Gareth Evans. Gareth Evans has a film with Tom Hardy, Timothy Oliphant, and Forrest Whitaker. You had me at Evans, but when you throw in Hardy and Oliphant, take my money now, as the internets say. I mean, if it's anything like The Raid, holy balls, it's going to be awesome. And then the last one is something that I didn't really know anything about, but it similarly has me intrigued. Just for the sort of premise, it's called Bullet Train. It's from David Leitch, I think that's how you say his name. But it has Brad Pitt, Sandra Bullock, Joey King, and Michael Shannon. So I'm pretty excited for any Shannon film. I've really taken to him in the past couple of years. Midnight Special's fantastic. Even something like Revolutionary Road or even Man of Steel. I think he was a great choice for Zod in Man of Steel. So this tells the story of five assassins aboard a fast-moving bullet train who find out their missions have something in common. So could it be like Clue? Could it be like Knives Out? Who knows? But we'll find out. And as we're 8% into this year, we're that much closer to these films, Avatar 2 and Nope. So I'm excited, buddy. How about you?
I'm very, very excited. As I told you, this is a year that we go back to the movies. I mean,
we gotta go back crappy years to the theaters.
I mean, there were 2 years that we actually felt uncomfortable. Some people haven't even gone back to theaters, and I think this is a year that we actually go back. I mean, we just got used to something that didn't used to be normal, but just normalized it. And I think that's just a declaration from my side that this is the year that I'm going to go back to the movies as I regularly did before 2020. And I'm very excited, and mostly excited to talk about, you know, I mean, when we wrap up our 2022 again, and just like talk about these films that we just felt excited to talk about. Yeah.
Well, in the immortal words of the philosopher Lewis, tell me, doctor, where are we going this time? So yes, we will venture boldly and bravely into the 2022 to see as much as possible, listen to as much as possible, and talk about as much as possible. And we will hope to catch you next time on the Go See Talk podcast. Scratch that. Two O's and Goose flying right into the danger zone with my wingman. Federico, you have any plans for this weekend besides the movies we talked about?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Those plans are good enough for me, man.
That's great. Stay focused, stay sharp, stay golden. Well, thank you, everybody. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.